Whatever you want to talk about, food, sex, money, drugs, alcohol, women, men, doesn't matter.
No, I don't want to get into
Horse.
all of, I don't want to get into all of that. Well, I'll just go and run my mouth the way I normally do, and we'll see what
Take
happens.
as long as you need. John L., everybody. Great to have you, sir.
Thanks, Mark. I'm John. I'm an alcoholic. Kind of didn't expect to speak. This is in a way just in time because I'm coming up on an anniversary here on the 22nd. If not, touch wood as they say in England, or knock wood as we say in the U.S. If I don't drink for the next 9 days, I'll have 41 years. So I guess that makes me a little bit of an old timer. And that's certainly not what I expected when I came in. I walked in at 24, and well, let me back up. I started drinking when I was 15, or thereabouts, and really, outside of maybe a sip of my dad's beer here and there, and with my dad sitting there, so it wasn't like, and beer wasn't all that great a tasting thing. So I hadn't really acquired the obsession just yet. But outside of that, the first time I ever seriously drank, I drank seriously. Like it was definitely for the effect. I was with a few guys, and we were out to have, to party and to get high. And I was about 15 years old at the time. So clearly, fairly underage. And I forget exactly. I looked older, and the drinking age was 18. But I forget if it was me or so. I think it was one of the other fellas who got it for us. But boy, I took that first drink, and I get, I mean, retrospect is a little funny, but I didn't know it at the time. But it sure felt like I had arrived. Like this thing that I put in my system was. That was the stuff. It kind of, looking back on it, it seems like it filled a hole I didn't know I had. And what I was later to find out, of course, is that not only did it fill it, it also ended up creating a bigger hole. So it ended up sort of eating its way through my life psychologically, right? And making me dependent on it. But of course, I don't think all of that happened right away. At first, it was probably weekends or whenever I could get it. I was just going into high school, and I was underage, so it was always a trick, like who could go into the package store, as we used to call them in New England, and not get carded. Sometimes you would, and sometimes you wouldn't. But I certainly thought about it, and then I did do some other drugs as well. Various other things. I was a young guy, a teenager, and experimenting with a lot of different things. I didn't get into too much trouble early on. I mean, one thing that did happen in high school one day is I drank so much w one day the night before that I went to school in the morning, and someone asked if I'd been drinking. And of course, I took that to mean like this morning. So. And with typical alcoholic honesty, I said no. But it was not for nothing. I mean, it wasn't. They didn't make up the smell on my breath, right? It was still in my system enough. So so this went on, and then I went away to college. And when I went to college, all by this point I was 18. That was the drinking age. I was away from home. I had freedom. No one was, there were no constraints. Didn't have to get home at a certain time, and so obviously the wheels were off at that point. And about f 9 days before the end of this second semester of my sophomore year, I had kind of drank my way and skipped class my way, and gotten involved in this crazy relationship that kind of broke my heart my way, all of these things all together, into like feeling like I was probably going to flunk out that semester. So I left school without finishing that semester. Went back home, worked in the mill for a while, and now I had money in my pocket, and was living at home even better. So you know the rest. I drank a lot. Fast forward to going back to school at a state school near me. And when I say near me, I lived in Rhode Island, so everything was near me. You know, it's a pretty tiny state if you're not familiar with our geography here. So went to school for a couple more years, and it was during this time that I started to realize that I was having a lot of anxiety during the day. I was basically, you know, when I wasn't drinking, you know, in retrospect, I know I was probably thinking about drinking a fair amount, but in addition to that, I was just very, very anxious, and I was shaken, and I was afraid, you know, and I didn't have any reason to be afraid. I was doing pretty well in school. You know, I had gotten a little more regular in my habits as far as studying and so forth. So it wasn't like I was in, you know, I had a good grade point average. I mean, I was tootling along, a young guy, so I didn't really have anything to be this terrified about, but I would shake, and it was awful. So it got so bad that I went to the health services on campus, and I was sure that I had, like, I don't know, diabetes, or I had like a brain tumor, or I had some exotic thing causing all this anxiety, you know. And I don't know. I don't remember if they ran any blood tests or if they just like talked to me. You know, she kind of, I know they took a medical history, so you know, they asked this, that, and the other thing, you know. And I don't know. They may have ran some blood work, and maybe I came back. And the person I met with said, "Ask me." So, well, do you drink? And I immediately, like, you know, the wall went up, and you know, again with the alcoholic honesty, right? And well, yeah, I have a couple of beers from now, you know, from time to time. You know, it's like the most, you know, it just absolutely minimizing what I was really doing, which was getting completely wasted, certainly every weekend, and probably several nights during the week by this point. And so she wanted me to see this fellow. I still remember his name. And she said, "He's, yeah, he's kind of a specialist in treating, you know, alcoholism." And I said, "Okay, well, I don't remember if she made an appointment and I didn't go, or if I just said, let me think about that, or something along those lines." And I got out of there as soon as I could, and didn't come back. Probably, so I graduated. Went about my business for another probably a year, year and a half, living at home, working as a security guard, working the night shift, sometimes the night shift, and then so, then later on during the day, and just getting drunk every night, and shaking my way through work every day, occasionally missing work. You know, not getting in too much trouble yet, but really a mess emotionally. And and I do remember, you know, kind of waking up hungover, and thinking, I'm not gonna, I can't do this anymore. I'm not gonna do this anymore. I'm not gonna do it today, right? And then of course at 5 o'clock I'd get out of work, and I'd be on my way home, and the cars wheel would mister, you know, would know its way to the restaurant on the way home, where I could kid myself. I kid myself at the restaurant. I would only have try to have like two beers during the week, but they were 1 liter each, so it wasn't exactly like two beers. It was more like a, what does that work out to be, a six pack or so. Anyhow. So at some point, My mom and my sister got together and they sat me down and they told me they were concerned about me, that I had a problem. They thought I had a problem, and I had been told this, that gal that I was having trouble with, by the way, in the in college, she had said she thought I was an alcoholic one time, with tears in her eyes. And I gave her an argument. And when she later got married to another guy, I drank over that for about the next 3 years. But anyway, so my mom and my wife, my mom and my sister sat me down and kind of offered to help and explained to me that I had a problem. And I guess I don't know how ready I was, but I do know that I was pretty tired of living the way I was. So for some reason, I didn't get defensive about it. Yeah, maybe it was the way they said it. Maybe it's the fact that my mom and that sister especially had always been real special to me, right? So it was hard to ignore at that point. So I let my mom take me to I think she was a psychiatrist in retrospect, and she suggested that I think she first suggested that I go into detox, and I said, "Well, no, I gotta go to work." And she said, "Well, at least let me prescribe something." I said, "Well, I don't really want to take any pills for this." She said, "Well, it could kill you." And so I changed my mind about the pills at that point. And she said, "Yeah, well, you might be able to do it with just, the prescription and go to AA meetings." I said, "Okay." So somehow or another, I found out where they were. I'm not sure if she gave me my first, I think she probably gave me my first one. Like she looked it up on a meeting list. At the time, there were paper meeting lists. We didn't have a phone app. We didn't have phones. Well, we had phones, but they were on the wall in the kitchen. So anyway, she got me hooked up with my first meeting. It was on a Tuesday night, the Another Way group in Smithfield, Rhode Island. If you're curious, they're not still there. And didn't know what to expect, was kind of surprised. I'm like, oh, the lights are on. I thought this was anonymous. It's like it's kind of surprised that it was such a well-lit environment. And this really nice guy with a blue sweater named Phil, who was probably at that time about the same my age I am now, shook my hand at the door and he said, "Welcome, and why don't you have a cup of coffee and we'll talk." I said, "Okay, so we'll talk, So he welcomed me and he kind of told me that, I might hear some God talk, and but it's God as we understand him. And at the time, I was a better out. I was more of a drunk than I was an atheist, so I didn't come in with a real grouchy atheism. I developed that later. AA helped with that. So I said, okay. He said, "It's God as we understood him, so you don't worry about it." I'm like, "All right." And he said, "You listen to the stories, try to identify, not compare. And the most important thing is try to get to a meeting tomorrow night again. And for the next 24 hours, don't drink. And we don't quit forever. We stay sober a day at a time." And he said, "If that's too hard, break it down. You can break it down to 5 minutes at a time." I'm like, "Okay, that sounds doable." And I don't know. I mean, I was still under the impact effects of the Librium, so it probably wasn't too hard physically for me to follow that. And so anyway, he was real nice to me. And the people who shared, they shared about drinking the way I did. They shared about getting blackouts and feeling guilt and getting into jackpots. And some of the stories, just like Phil had predicted, were worse than mine, quote unquote. They had gone further and gotten into more trouble, but the feelings were the same, the guilt and the remorse and the blame and the trying to stop and not being able to. So all of that, it really, like when I heard these speakers, I was like, man, this is like these guys know something. They sound a lot like me. So that was good. And I guess I was fortunate. I became like a little AA, I was very scared of going back and drinking again. And so I tried to do whatever anybody told me to do to an extent. Wasn't that great on phone calls. I kind of beat myself up over that and everything else for the first few months. I did get involved with a gal in kind of in the first year, and a couple of years later we got married, and we were married for 24 years. So I guess in retrospect, 24 years is not a total disaster, but it didn't last beyond that. Anyhow, the so after about 10, after about 9 or 10, well, I'll just fast forward, try to get to where I am now. After about 10 years or so, 9 years or so, I started to get more and more atheist. I had an agnostic sponsor, and I started listening to him. And he kind of made a lot of sense in a lot of areas, but he was very hardcore about his opinions about God, and they were not that similar to mine, So to the extent I was open to a spiritualist sleepening, I don't, you know, I don't want to give him credit, because that's the way it made sense to me, but he certainly didn't discourage it. And in fairness, the guy who helped me, my first sponsor before him, taught me the third tradition, and taught me that, taught me not to judge my sobriety, and to just, not interpret my own desire, because I have an alcoholic tune of thinking, that kind of thing. But he was a get on your knees kind of guy, and I followed that way for at first. But by about 9 or 10 years, I guess AA had gotten a little rigid. I had moved a couple of times, and the new group was, my goodness, they had How It Works at the beginning, and they had so much prayer and so much going on, and I just got really kind of tired of hearing about all that stuff. And it was almost like when I talked to people about kind of disbelief or whatever, having them push back so hard almost made me like it hardened my position a little bit. Anyway, at the around the same time, my sponsor suggested I try. I had gone through like steps 6 and 7, formally. My sponsor was always a little weak on 8 and 9, and so am I. Other than just trying to not be a jerk with people, right? But I had done a lot of work on understanding at least 6, and he suggested, he said, maybe it's time to stop being a victim and just try staying away from AA a little bit. And I thought, what are you, crazy? Everybody in AA said, oh, I stayed away from AA and I got drunk, He's like, no, just, see how it is, see how it would be if you just go live your life for a little while. I said, okay. So I figured I'd try that for, I don't know, a month or so, even though I thought it was crazy. And so that period lasted 30 years, and I stayed sober. I was okay. I had a lot of, my career was taken off. I was doing, I had taught myself to be a programmer after doing a bunch of liberal arts in college. So that kept me off the streets, and I was married. I had a daughter. So I had a life. I had a good support system, and but I didn't get to a lot of meetings in those 30 years. I probably went to maybe a dozen in 30 years, which is not a lot. Then I retired, and I said, "Well, we need a social outlet. I think I'll go to some meetings." So I started going to meetings again, and started hanging around in the fellowship again, and being a part of that. And I went back to meetings like a month before my 39th birthday, because I knew it was coming up, and I wanted a chip. So I figured if I showed up a month before, it wouldn't be like, showing up that day. Hi guys, by the way, I wanted him to kind of get to know me a little bit first, right? So I was clever about it. So I picked up a chip, and this was a religious meeting. I call them now. Most people call it an AA meeting. I still go to that one. I don't mind too much. Once in a while, I'll meet a real. I met one fella who, let's just say, was a good a good helper for my 10th step. Yeah, because he didn't want to hear it. And all I did, I was just trying to be friendly to him, and so I shared that I don't go to meetings a lot because I go to a lot more secular AA. It's like, oh my goodness, you'd think I said that I kill babies and eat them in my spare time. It was like the worst thing I could have said to this guy. So anyhow, but everybody else there has been really great. And I'm out of the secular closet with my religious friends. There's also a sec. Then I found out about secular AA. There's a meeting here, that just about gets us up through today, I think. I'm kind of active on Reddit. There's this. We just started an AA secular forum. r/AA secular. If you want to stop by and say hello, I just wrote a big story about my spiritual sleepening today. I was just felt inclined to chat, and there's it so far has grown to a couple of hundred folks, so that's nice, and it's only been about a month or so. So anyway, I appreciate the chance to be here. Mark, I know you had suggested getting here on a weekend. I appreciate you like letting me do the lead. That's great. I certainly am the type of person with I had no ego when I came in. I had like I had no self-esteem. I had guilt. I had blame. I had fear. That's what I came in with. And my sponsor used to say, "I have a healthy ego." And I looked at him like he was on Mars. It was a crazy. I was like, "What are you talking about? You have a healthy ego." And now I know what he's talking about. I don't mind chatting. I like it. So anyway, but having said that, I also know better than to take up the whole meeting because I don't want to be the cause of anyone's having a resentment because I didn't get to say something. So I will quit with that. And thank you again, Mark, for asking me to do this.